Welcome to the Heat Check Podcast, formerly known as the All You Can Heat Podcast. My name is Wes Goldberg, editor of allyoucanheat.com, writer at Fanside. With me is David Ramil. What's going on, Dave?
Not much. Looking forward to this exciting season of Heat Check Podcast. I mean, I know we had talked about changing the name, and I am excited. I think it's a new era in Heat basketball and in All You Can Heat podcasts.
That's a great way to put it. I didn't even think about it that way. Yeah, who needs LeBron? The Heat Check Podcast does not need LeBron James.
That was actually the runner-up name, the Who Needs LeBron James Podcast.
We're going to focus on just pod movement, you know, just bouncing questions back and forth because we just don't have a dominant podcaster anymore. So we're really just going to focus on that, you know, some pick and rolls, stuff like that. It's been a wild off season. LeBron's gone, obviously. We haven't talked in a little while since this thing was called the All You Can Heat Podcast. I'm not even sure exactly when the last time we talked was, but we've had a couple of preseason games, and I think the team that currently stands, we pretty much know how it's going to look, except for the point guard rotation. I think a lot of people assume Mario Chalmers would be the starter. Norris Cole started last night against the Magic, which Eric Spoelstra says he doesn't want that to bring up questions, but clearly he didn't do that for no reason, you know what I mean? Like, he put Norris Cole in the starting lineup to see how it would look. And what was your takeaway from last night's game?
Well, I didn't see it, but I mean, having seen some highlights and things of that sort, I think it's coming along really well. I think the whole experiment is working up very well overall, as far as the team is concerned. As mm-hmm. far as the point guard battle is concerned, I don't think Norris did himself any favors as far as locking up the starting position. I think he's still not comfortable running the offense. He's shown spurts where he can feel comfortable, but overall, I just don't see him taking that next step. And so I think by default, Mario is still the best option as far as starting point guard is concerned, at least until rookie Shabazz Napier finally starts hitting consistently.
Or at all, really. He's something like 7 of 24 since, like, the summer league. Like, it's just been awful.
Yeah. So the thing is, with him, I see something that I don't see from Chalmers or Cole. Like, there's a comfort level there at running the point. Mm-hmm. You know, he's just smoother handling the ball and making that transition up court. He just seems much more comfortable in the role. Maybe it's, you know, 4 years of being gun-shy for Mario Chalmers, having LeBron bring the ball up, and maybe he's just lost that, you know. I know he talks that he's pretty comfortable and very aggressive and confident and all that, but he just doesn't look the part anymore. And I think, you know, something about Napier gives me confidence that he's actually going to be the starting point guard at some point in the future. But, I mean, he's just so woeful on that shot. It's hard to see him taking over the role.
He just kind of glides. He's very, very natural. Meanwhile, Chalmers, I wrote a piece a little bit ago on allyoucanheat.com about putting him at sixth man. And I still think if the competition isn't one, like, outright by anybody, I think Chalmers just being a better sixth man or being better off the bench than either Norris Cole or Shabazz Napier at this point might be, that should come into play, because if this offense is really going to run through Chris Bosh and to another extent Dwayne Wade, then I don't necessarily know if Norris Cole, Mario Chalmers, or Napier, or whoever the point guard might be, necessarily needs to quote-unquote run the offense. I don't see this team as a team that goes through the point guard. Bosh is going to be in the high post. It's almost like the Pacers, the way they use David West. David West just stands in the high post and just kind of gets the ball from whoever the awful point guard starting for the Pacers might be that game, usually George Hill, and just kind of divvies up the ball from there and is the focal point of the offense in that position. And from everything that I'm reading and what it looks like, Bosh is going to play a similar type of role. And Wade is going to demand the ball so much that he's probably going to bring up the ball a lot. We even saw Bosh bring up the ball a few times against the Magic last night. I just don't see the point guard as like a Rondo-type position or a Kyle Lowry-type position where we necessarily rely on them to initiate the offense. So I think go Norris Cole because he can at least defend other point guards, where Chalmers has kind of slid in that regard the last couple of years. And at least you know you're getting a quality on-ball defensive player to start games.
Yeah, so that's what you see as being the major benefit of starting Norris, is that you're going to get that kind of consistent defense?
Yeah, and because I think Chalmers, because he can move to the shooting guard position, you can make him a sixth man. Because we don't even know how many games Danny Granger is going to play. I mean, there's already talk about him being on the Wade's maintenance program, so you can't really rely on him as being the consistent sixth man. I think you put Chalmers in that position where he could play the one or the two. He can come in and spell Wade, who's going to need his rest regardless of what he says this season. And he is, I think, my argument is we know what Chalmers is, and no matter how much he keeps talking about, oh, I'm going to take the ball more, I'm going to score more, I'm going to be more aggressive. I mean, we've been hearing that how many years in a row now? Even with LeBron there, we've heard things like that from him. Maybe not so outright, but we've heard things like, I think I could do more for this team, I think I could step up, kind of thing. And we know what Chalmers is. Nothing Chalmers does from this point on is going to surprise us. I mean, yeah. he is what he is, right?
Yeah. If there's anybody who's been, you know, deserving of that phrase, I think it's Mario Chalmers. He is what he is. He's gonna have his great moments, and then his "what the hell are you doing, Mario Chalmers" moments, and that's perfectly suited. So I'm wondering, like, what have you seen from Shannon Brown where you would think that maybe Mario would be better at spelling Wade as far as the two guard is concerned?
I just think because Shannon Brown got cut by the Knicks and got cut by the Spurs after like 10 days that I don't know if he's necessarily a better option than to back up Wade than Mario Chalmers is. And I like the idea of when Wade comes out, then you're running with that two-point guard lineup that is familiar with each other, because Chalmers and Cole have played together quite a bit last season. So they're kind of familiar with each other. I still think Shannon Brown deserves minutes off the bench, but we haven't really seen much from Reggie Williams. So there's still some value in a third guard there. And if Shabazz Napier can't get his shot to fall, then he does not deserve to be on the court until he can start actually creating some points for himself. So it's not so much anything against Shannon Brown. I just think that if you are invested in Mario Chalmers, and to a degree they are, at least for 2 years, you might as well try to utilize his talents the best that they can. And he's a good shooter. He is a good scorer when he's got his nights. He can get to the basket. And I've always said this, he shoots over big guys better than anybody else, even when LeBron was there, better than anybody else on that Heat team. And yeah. And I think there's a value in him just bringing him off the bench as a scorer and letting Norris Cole, because in the Magic game last night, Cole didn't score other than 2 points. Right. But he had assists, he had rebounds, he played good defense. Chalmers scored 10 points but only made like 2 of 8 baskets, and most of his points came off of free throws. And I just see him more as a scorer at this point, where Norris Cole can kind of give you the assists, the rebounding, and the on-ball defense. We don't have an elite point guard, so he can at least defend elite point guards, and I think you have to have one of the two in this NBA, and Chalmers is neither of those.
So Chalmers came off the bench as the sixth man?
Yes. He was the first one off the bench last night.
That didn't really work out then. At least, I mean, if we're looking at him coming off the bench then and being able to provide some scoring, he didn't do it just because his shot wasn't falling yesterday. But, I mean, was he able to at least defend well? I mean, I don't know who, you know, the Magic were thin in the backcourt. I guess Payton was the guy off the bench, right? He didn't start for Orlando yesterday.
Right. So what happened was Norris Cole started at point guard. Chalmers came in for Dwayne Wade. And so you had that Cole and Chalmers at the two guard. Cole kept running the point even when Chalmers came in for Wade. And then when Cole came out on that second round of substitutions, the post-six-man substitution,
right.
Cole came out for Shannon Brown, and then Chalmers moved over to the point guard spot, and Brown came in at the two guard spot. And that's when we brought in Granger and things like that. So and Chris Anderson came in at that point too. So I like that rotation. I actually really, really like that rotation. Because you're getting Shannon Brown involved, he can cut, and now you have a Brown and Chalmers point guard that I think guard combination that I think meshes well together. And he didn't score, but that's because his shot wasn't falling. But I thought it was effective. It looked good. I like the way that rotation sets up, because now when you bring in Chalmers, you're not because Cole doesn't really play that two guard spot. So if you start Chalmers, you can. In that next round of substitutions, you take Chalmers out, you put Cole in, and Wade's still in there. I think you're giving Wade more rest by allowing Chalmers to be a two guard, and then on that next substitution pattern, go with Shannon Brown. And so Wade almost gets a whole nother substitution pattern of rest, you know, at maximum, unless Spoelstra wants to bring him in for whatever reason. But he's got, like, two rounds of substitutions to kind of rest, as opposed to just one when Chalmers is playing. Does that make any sense? Did I explain that right?
Absolutely. And that's kind of the problem, unfortunately, is that everything you said absolutely makes sense, and when you're dealing with Mario, nothing makes sense. And so you just kind of have to, like, you have to kind of approach him so weirdly. You know, I just don't see him. We saw him lose confidence, which is something mm-hmm. we haven't seen over the past few years. You know, in the finals, he really lost it there. He wasn't able to manufacture anything. He just was completely removing himself from the game. And I think if he gets benched, even though logistically it makes sense, we could say that it'll maximize whatever talents he brings in, even if they blow smoke up his ass infinitely and tell him that, you know, this is the best place for him to continue to grow, I think it's still going to be such a blow to his self-esteem, strange as that might sound. And I think he might wind up, you know, losing some of that old spark that we're expecting from him. So I'd love to see it, because everything you're describing seems to make a whole hell of a lot of sense. But Mario is the anti-sense. You know, he's the unique. You can't figure him out for the life of you. So I think he's going to have to continue starting. Just because Norris is at this point in his fourth year, I think he's used to being the backup. I think he's comfortable with it. I don't think it'll change the way he plays the game. So I think it's better to probably just stick with things the way they are, or move him. Because if he's only going to bring marginal ability and not be that next level player that we need him to be off the bench, then Mario needs to go. And hard as that might sound, I mean, I love having him on the team. I was really confident that he might be able to take a next step forward this year. But if he's not going to be able to do it, and maybe we're making, you know, mounds out of molehills, I hate being cliche, but, you know, it's only two preseason games in, but already he's sending out tweets saying that, you know, there's some negativity at practice, and then he gets benched, et cetera. So, you know, we're starting to see Mario kind of retreat into himself, and this isn't the player he's supposed to be. He's supposed to be out there. He's supposed to be more comfortable. So I wonder if this is really what's best for him and, you know, therefore best for the team.
You made a good point where he kind of got gun-shy the last 4 years, because I remember before LeBron, he was happy shooting the ball whenever he wanted to, you know, and it seemed like it worked with him and Wade in the backcourt. But LeBron got there, and yeah, he had to give up the ball a little bit, and I do wonder if that kind of ruined him a little bit, because it seems like he's not necessarily doesn't really know when it's okay to shoot, and I think there's going to be an adjustment period in life after LeBron, but I hope it gets there. My thing is, while I agree with you that the starting job is very, very important to him, Norris Cole also did say that he thinks he's ready to start. So there's definitely something there where Chalmers says he wants to be the starter. Pat Riley said he views Chalmers as a starter in the offseason. Norris Cole is saying he wants to be a starter now. I wonder if it might be an adjustment at first, but hypothetically, if Chalmers starts eating up second units as a sixth man and just goes completely Jamal Crawford, you know what I mean?
Yes, that's a very good point, because then that's exactly what he needs, and that'll be that boost where he'll say, oh, you know, I can come in and play my game and be the Mario I'm supposed to be. And
not have to worry about throwing it to Wade or Bosch or anybody.
Right. That's an excellent point, man. That's really, really good thinking there, because, you know, but then they need to sell him on that, and they haven't been able to sell him on anything over the past 4 years, 6 years, rather. I mean, he's been in the league now, but this is his seventh season, right? So, you know, can Riley or Spoelstra or somebody on the coaching staff work with him and get him to see that maybe, quote-unquote, demotion isn't a demotion, that he's actually going to be able to benefit and grow, and then maybe to parlay this role over the next 2 years into a bigger contract? You know, it's a possibility.
Right. And I think the way to sell that is to get not diminish his minutes. He could still play 28, 30 minutes a game as that sixth man, because Chalmers, what Cole and Napier cannot do is play that two-guard spot the way Chalmers can, because he's a good outside shooter. Right. So, and has experience as a two-guard. So I think if you sell him on the six-man idea that you are the first guy off the bench, you're going to get 30 minutes a game, and we're going to let you do what you want to do. You're going to be the guy running that second unit. We need you, because our second unit is just, quite frankly, not that good. And if you're the Heat and you envision a second unit with Norris Cole, who isn't necessarily an aggressive shooter, and you put Chalmers in that spot, that second unit is suddenly a lot better. with Chalmers. I really believe that Chalmers' game can elevate in that second unit, and he can elevate the second unit in general. But, yes, what's more important to Chalmers, and neither of us knows that, is the minutes that come with being a starter or the notoriety that comes along with being a starter.
Yeah, because, and I was just thinking also mm-hmm. that maybe he might put more stock in being the guy who closes games, kind of like Ray Allen did last year, you know, where mm-hmm. he's there in close games towards the end.
That's another good point.
Yeah, because then, you know, that gives him that boost also. It's like, look, we need your outside shooting. You're better than Norris. So when it comes to rolling lineup to close out games, if we need a quick shot or something like that, you're the man for that. And so that's, right. you know, maybe you won't start, but you'll finish. And that means a lot to him, I think. So that would be a big boost.
Yeah, like we don't need you to start because we don't want you starting because we need you to elevate our second unit because we're not as deep this year. Like that, we need you to be that guy on the second unit. And you're going to finish games.
I think we solved the Mario conundrum. I think we should be hired as assistant coach.
Pat Riley, call us up. Fire Chris Quinn. Hire Wes Goldberg and David Ramil.
Hey, that might be jumping the gun a bit. We don't want to get Quinny fired already, man.
No, I like Quinn. That's true. I just... So...
He has such a weird cult following there, you know?
He does have a weird cult following. Nobody forgot him either. Everybody wanted him to play more when he was with the Heat, and he never really did. And then I guess that train just got back on the tracks as soon as he was hired as the assistant coach. It was kind of strange.
You know what it was, though? For me, anyway, what really cemented how much I learned to appreciate Chris Quinn was, well, he was already gone, and the big cactus was burning down bridges over in Phoenix, remember? And Shaquille O'Neal said, they got me playing with Chris Quinn. It's like, you got to single out one guy when you're tearing apart the team. It's got to be, you know, the one white guy who's the 12th man on the bench there and, you know, obviously isn't as talented as some of the other players you've played with in your history. You got to single him out. So I think that's kind of what built that cult status up a little bit, at least for me.
Yeah, you're right. I shouldn't have called out Chris Quinn. I'm sorry, Chris. That's my bad. I feel terrible. So we got that that guy named LeBron James, and the Miami Heat are playing in Rio de Janeiro on Saturday. And I wrote a piece, I don't know, that was probably a few weeks ago now, about the NBA probably not getting as much drama as they wanted out of it as they think that they were going to get out of it by putting it on ESPN. It's on ESPN News, but whatever.
At an odd time slot, too. 5 o'clock Eastern, 2 o'clock your time, right? So, I mean, it's in the middle of college football season, so, I mean, it's very weird.
It is very... It's kind of like they wanted to put it on TV, but not really. So, there might be contract things that they have to have a college football game on ESPN. That's probably true, but that's stuff I don't know about. But, so, either way, LeBron looks like he's going to be playing. It looks like everybody on the Heat is going to be playing. Hopefully Josh McRoberts is playing. That we need to talk about that toe thing, because his toe has become an issue at this point, and I truly do believe. I hope I'm not overreacting. Maybe it's just me being neurotic, but this has already been too long for a toe surgery.
Well, I mean, but he's played, so, I mean, what seems to be the problem? I mean, he's worked out with the team. He was there in Indiana. I mean, he was practicing with the team. He's still practicing with the team, right? I mean, I don't think he's been sat out of practice. So he just hasn't been ready to go game time. Is there a feeling there with the coaching staff that maybe they're saving him? Maybe he's going to be their secret weapon or something? I mean, maybe I'm hoping for too much there. But, you know, I he's so versatile, and I see him being such a big part of how the starting unit flows. You know, with him being in the high post and initiating the offense, kind of what we've seen from Chris Bosh. So, you know, maybe he'll wind up taking over that six-man role. That's another thing to consider, but I don't know at this point. I mean, we need to see more action from him. We've got, what, 2.5 weeks before the first game of the season, first regular season game. So, you know, there's still plenty of time there. He did travel with a team, right, to Brazil, as far as I know.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything that says he hasn't, but...
He's there in the picture, the team picture they took on the plane. So he's there.
That's
the team,
right. He is. Yeah. So he's there. So maybe he'll play. Hopefully he'll play. If not, I mean, him and Bosch are the only people signed past 2016. So he's in the long term plans for this team. But so it's not like they necessarily need to see what he's got. But it would be nice to let him get, in terms of a roster construction standpoint. But it would be nice to get him going a little bit. So I'm hoping he plays Saturday.
Yeah.
how do you see that playing out? Do you think I'm really interested to see the body language at the beginning of that game. I want to see if Wade and Bosh and LeBron like hug or high five or shake hands or something. Something's gonna happen. I really want to see the body language. You know, they can hug, but they could not mean it.
That I think that might be the less interesting part of it. I mean, not to rip on your point, but it's just that, you know, they go through the motions so clearly at times. Mm-hmm. You know that what they're gonna do is they're gonna get dap and they're gonna be, you know, hugging each other and everything else like that. You know, they know their cameras are gonna be on them. It's not gonna be the same kind of tension that we felt with Shaquille O'Neal and Kobe Bryant, their first matchup, you know, when Shaq got traded to Miami. Which brings our Shaquille O'Neal references to two now in this podcast. It's crazy. But anyway, I think, you know, they're still friendly with one another. They've mentioned it. At least, you know, Dwayne Wade and LeBron James are friendly. Chris Bosh, you know, he claims that he has not spoken to LeBron James since the departure. But, you know, there's a possibility they may have spoken when they were at Dwayne Wade's wedding a few weeks ago. Who knows? The point is that he's trying to, you know, kind of support his team and show everybody that he's a little pissed off about what happened, and rightfully so. So, I mean, they'll be friendly, I think, to start the game. I think where you're really going to start to see any kind of tension, if there is any, is during the game itself, you know. If I remember the last time, you know, I always think about that classic battle between Wade and LeBron James from a few years ago, where they were matching each other basket for basket. That's the kind of, you know, that's my expectation for how the game plays out on Monday, is that I realize that there's a very good team in Cleveland, but there's still a very good one here in Miami as well, and I think they're going to take that opportunity with the national spotlight to kind of prove that to everybody who's already dismissed this Miami Heat squad.
I think they win the game. I think that they're going to be so fired up to prove that they can survive without LeBron James. And I don't think that the Cavaliers... I watched the Cavaliers preseason game against that... whatever, yeah. Tel Aviv thing, whatever.
Maccabi.
That one. And they don't... It's an interesting offense. They don't do anything. They don't really run many pick and rolls. They don't... There's ball movement, but they're not quite sure where it's going yet, and it's understandable that it's going to take a little bit to adjust to what everything's going to be. And I think the Heat are a little bit more at a comfort level in terms of the system because those core guys are still there. That I think that they're going to be so fired up to prove that they can win a game without LeBron James, and they haven't won a preseason game yet. They're 0-2. So I think they're going to be really fired up. I think they win the game, and I don't know if that necessarily is going to be a big deal, but that's just my prediction.
No, it's a good point. I mean, but I would see that, if anything, it would depend on, like, a big boost from the starting unit, because then once you get those scrubs in, I don't think they're going to have any kind of hard feelings against LeBron, so I don't know that they'll necessarily feel the same kind of need to prove a point as they're closing out games. It's, you know, it'll be all about proving their individual worth on a big setting there, so I don't know how strongly they'll be coming out trying to prove a point in the fourth quarter. You know, Sean Williams doesn't really have any experience with LeBron James, so I don't know that he's necessarily going to try and get fired up. He's just, you know, he'll just, you know, be knocked. It
depends on how much Wade and Bosh have fired those guys up in the locker room and on the flight to Brazil.
Yeah, and that's interesting too, because, you know, we saw one of the awkward moments of the. The game against, was it not the Pelicans, but was it the Pelicans? I can't remember now.
In Louisville? In Louisville?
Yeah. The Pelicans game. I guess the Heat tweeted out a little video of the pregame speech beforehand, and it was, you know, as the $118 million man, it's done by Chris Bosh now, whereas previously it used to be Wade, and then LeBron James has been doing it for the last 2 years. And that pregame speech, I mean, Chris Bosh is just such an intellectual, smart guy. He doesn't really strike me as being the kind of guy who gets fired up and rah-rah. And so it was like he delivered like two very, all right, let's go out and win. And then it's like, okay, are we done here? This awkward feeling. It's like, that's it, huh? All right, well, thanks, coach. You really got us psyched up. So I wonder how they're going to be able to get everybody fired up. Maybe these shots he's firing over the media saying he hasn't talked to LeBron, and, you know, he's not in the locker room, I don't care, etc. Maybe that's his way of kind of trying to prove a little bit of a point.
That's true. I don't know who gets this team fired up now. I guess it's got to be Wade, because I think you're right. I think they're going to kick Bosh out of that position. If he's just... All right, let's move the ball really well, and don't forget, you know, I'm the focal point of the offense now, so let's go.
Yeah. And don't forget those books I gave you in the office. I still haven't gotten those book reports from you. I'm looking at you, Shannon Brown.
Who read The Art of Motorcycle, Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance? Who's finished that? The reports are due Tuesday. So, I don't know. Other than the point guard position battle, what spot are you looking at? What are you intrigued about watching in this preseason?
I think, you know, I'm really comfortable. I mean, I know I probably have jinxed it because I was already starting to envision Danny Granger becoming like a Ray Allen type shooter off the bench. Mm-hmm. And then yesterday he goes, what, 1-for-10?
Yeah.
So, you know, not exactly the kind of performance. And maybe that's due to that kind of leg fatigue that he's talked about already. But, you know, I'm hoping to see much more production off the bench. I think everybody's quick to dismiss. I think we know what we're going to get from the starting unit unless Cole makes that transition and he takes over the team. I want to see the production off the bench. And mm-hmm. I want to see guys like Granger and James Ennis. You know, he's been a real pleasant surprise. I wasn't sure how he'd adapt, but it looks like he's made the transition a lot more quickly than anybody had assumed. So I think he's going to be a big factor, a hell of a contributor. So I'm looking to see him kind of take up that next step. And I'm curious to see how he'll go up against LeBron. You know, he's a very athletic guy. So can he match up with perhaps the best athlete in NBA history? I think that's something that I'm very interested to see.
Yeah, Ennis had a steal, his one steal yesterday. He just picked off a pass, tapped it to himself in midair, and just took it the other way for a dunk. And that was a very LeBron-esque play.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, there's potential there. You know, I guess the weakness from him is still his ball handling, right? And his outside mm-hmm. shot isn't as consistent mm-hmm. as can be. Did you see anything from him defensively that made you worry or that gave you hope that maybe he'll be able to take that next step?
I think the way we look at defense now is we understand and we accept that it's hard to measure defense in a box score, even these advanced statistics. We've yet to really master measuring defensive statistics, how defensive players are on the court. But and so when we watch the games, we're looking at things like mirroring the ball handler, being in the right position on pick and rolls. We're looking at those things now, and I think we've almost gotten away from looking at just spectacular plays like Ennis makes. And I think you have defenders like Tony Allen, who basically just mirror defender ball handlers perfectly and is able to stay between the ball handler and the hoop for, you know, 24 seconds at a time. But then there's other kind of defenders like James Ennis, and I would argue like LeBron James last year, where yes. they'll make like just a spectacular, like a good play, a good steal, and then take that in transition to offense and convert it into 2 points. And I think that is more where Ennis is right now. And he's got the athleticism to be able to stay in between ball handlers in the basket, but it might not be there yet. It might just that anticipation, that general instinct against defending top-level NBA ball handlers just might not be there yet. But he has the athleticism to be just to make a few steals in a game and actually create points out of it. And I think that's where his talents are.
Yeah, that just strikes me as being a little bit too opportunistic at times. Maybe it's just an old school mentality on my part. And as much as I can appreciate those big plays, that kind of just smacks of like more highlight reel defense to me. I mean, I think I'm more appreciative of the guy who is more of a mirror type defender and just kind of stays with his man. To me, you know, guys that even in the Heat history, guys like James Posey, mm-hmm. you know, Shane Battier, even Bruce Bowen or Keith Askins before him, those are the guys that I remember being like the real good on-ball defenders. And that's how they carved their niche there. They were the original 3-and-D guys. And I think, you know, I'd like to see more of that from Ennis. But, I mean, I can appreciate the big play because it certainly can be a point to build on. But you kind of need to have more to build on there. It's not enough of a foundation there.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I would much rather have somebody that just is able to lock down a guy for, you know, 24 seconds at a time. But I think that if Ennis is showing his ability to be opportunistic and to do things, that shows good instincts. And I think that shows potential to be a lockdown defender because he's a rookie. You know, it's, I don't think we expect him to be like a great defender, and I don't. So whereas where people say that his issue is defense, I'm a little bit more, I'm more reassured, and maybe it's me being impressed by highlight reel things, but I'm a little bit more reassured when I see those instincts and that athleticism actually occur on the court, and I could say, okay, this guy can hang with NBA players. We know this, so I have no reason to doubt that he'll improve on defense.
Good point. Okay, you've convinced me. So now I'm looking forward to seeing him make that transition.
Okay, so, but Luol Deng, we haven't talked about him yet. He's a good on-ball defender.
Yeah, he's phenomenal. I am absolutely thrilled to have him on the team. There's just so much about him. I've always kind of appreciated him from afar. You know, when I think about, you know, his personality and everything else, again, maybe it's a little conservative on my part, but he just, the way he strikes me as being kind of a good person, you know, not just a philanthropist, but just a decent overall human being. And I think his peers and the teams that he's played for, you know, Atlanta notwithstanding, I think everybody's always appreciated the kind of person that he is. And so I'm just glad to have him. But that aside, as a player, I think everybody's going to be incredibly pleasantly surprised. I used probably the worst barometer of all time today to figure out how people in the Heat fan base are appreciative of Deng. And that's my mom. And she has no idea whatsoever. She couldn't tell me anything about basketball, not from an analytics perspective or anything like that. She just knows who she likes. And she told me, I really like Deng. Well, I guess that's enough for me then, because as long as she really likes him, that means everybody else in the Miami Heat Nation probably loves him. And I think they're starting to see some of that. You and I and a lot of other fans have seen throughout the years that he's a very consistent defender, very athletic, a pretty decent shooter at times, and I think he's going to be a huge factor this season.
Yeah, and the word consistent with Deng is used so often, and I don't know if there's a better guy to replace LeBron James than Luol Deng, because he's going to give you the effort, and he does not have that bodacious personality that LeBron has.
Exactly. So you're getting consistency from him, and then you're getting that kind of good guy personality right off the court as well. So it's like, oh, you kind of feel sorry for him having to be the guy that fills in these huge shoes. And he's already talked about that he doesn't really care about
filling in. And I believe him when he says he doesn't really care, because I don't think he does. I just think he wants to go play basketball. Like, it's not like you're replacing LeBron James with J.R. Smith or something.
Yeah, but I mean, you're right in that I can appreciate the fact that Deng is a much better player than J.R. Smith or anything like that. But, you know, you have to, you know, I would feel some kind of pressure taking over for somebody that was better than me in blogging or anything like that. You know, I know it's a much smaller scale here, but there's always some pressure involved. I think a lot of what athletes, you know, they're so jaded because any kind of weakness gets misconstrued or blown up or anything like that. So I feel like that's what they have to say. Because what do we want him to say? Oh, no, you know, shitting my pants at the concept of having to fill in for LeBron James. I mean, that would really get some confidence from Heat Nation there. So, you know, what's he going to say? And this is a guy who, I mean, I've talked about it before. I've written about it before. He's been in his shadow ever since high school, mm-hmm. when he's the second best recruit in the nation. And he's always been kind of compared there because, you know, they're a similar build. They're natural athletes. And then LeBron has taken his, you know, incredible rise to superstardom. Meanwhile, Deng has been overworked in Chicago, and he's, you know, on his last leg, so to speak. But, you know, I expect him to say what he's said already, and you know, if you believe him, that's cool. I don't personally think it's 100% honest, but who cares? The reality is that he's filled in for him admirably, and I think he's going to continue to do so.
You know, I'd argue the other point that nobody actually expects Luol Deng to be as good as LeBron. Nobody expects LeBron James out of Luol Deng. So it's almost a freeing thing. It's like, okay, let me just go out and do what I do, because nobody expects me to be LeBron James. So, you know, it's impossible for either of us to be in his head, but if I was in that situation, maybe, yeah, there'd obviously be something like, oh God, I have to fill in for LeBron now, but I don't know. Maybe as an athlete, you don't really think, okay, I'm not as good as LeBron, but realistically, as a human being, you know you're not as good as LeBron James, but...
So are you saying that as athletes that they're wired differently than us as bloggers? I'm taking a little bit of an offense here because I take that's my true. What I do very competitively. You know,
no, you're right. You're right. There's not a difference at all. So But looking at Luol Deng a little bit, he was the second best player on the court until the second half. In the first half, he was the second best player on the court last night against the Magic. I was kind of getting this before. We use consistent a lot with Luol Deng, but offensively, and he gives you consistent effort. But offensively, he can get hot, and when he gets hot, he is very, very good. So I appreciate the word consistent with him, but it's not as if he's giving you, you know, 14-8 a night, because he can go off for 25 points, you know, on a Tuesday night, and you have no idea when it's coming. So,
and he did that in the half a season with Cleveland. He had a couple of big games back to back, if I remember correctly. And so, I mean, what surprised me mostly with him, and maybe we haven't seen it because of those lingering injuries, but I'm really surprised at his speed. I mean, the way he brings the ball down, he's much quicker. And I've been referring to it as deceptive, but maybe it's been there all along and I just haven't noticed. I mean, is that your take as well? Because I see him bringing that ball up, and then all of a sudden he seems like he has like this 9-foot wingspan with those huge limbs of his, and then he just kind of pulls up, and he can either knock down a turnaround over a defender or finish at the rim with surprising athleticism. So, I mean, that's been a pleasant thing for me to see.
Yeah, I think Heat fans are going to be surprised with him in general, because most of our experiences with Luol Deng is in the playoffs, and most of the focus was on Deng defending LeBron. And so he knocked down a corner three here and there, but I think in general we're just going to be surprised by just the little things he does. Maybe almost in the way, this might not be the right comparison, but almost in the way that we were kind of surprised with how many little things Shane Battier does.
That's a good point.
You know, because I think there's last night I was very, very impressed. Luol Deng just went right at Nikola Vucevic and just shot the ball right over him. And Nikola Vucevic, as you and I know, has caused a lot of problems for the Heat, and Heat fans basically hate him. And so for Luol Deng to just go right at him and shoot the ball over him, he might not have known that that was a big deal for Heat fans, but for him to go right at Vucevic and just drain a basket right over him was a really big deal, at least to me.
Vuce an actual nickname, or is that just something that you came up with right now?
I think I stuttered. They call him Vooch. Vooch.
Vooch?
Vooch.
That sounds and nasty. I don't like
it. It's a little too close. and I'm not from the Orlando area. I just went to school there for 4 years. I'm from South Florida, but
it'd be a knock on your Miami
credit. I'm proud of it.
We know you.
I'm proud of it. So Orlando is the land of chain restaurants and Nikola Vucevic, so I'm not necessarily banging my chest saying, O-Town.
I mean, I'm surprised, because I know a lot of people from Orlando that claim it's a wonderful area, so I think there's this shadow of Mickey Mouse hanging over everything there, so there's this kind of like Napoleonic complex where they're trying to prove that, you know, they're just as much of a metropolis as Miami or anywhere else in the country. It's like, sorry, you're the land of theme parks and, you said, fast food restaurants or chain restaurants.
Yeah, and I'll probably get myself in trouble again with Magic. Magic fans typically don't like me, but that complex sinks right into the Magic fan base, because they think that it's just a matter of time before they win a championship, and they've been shorted for like a couple of different occasions in the Shaq and Dwight years, and it's just they feel like they're entitled to a championship at some point, and they know that this current group of players that they have is just going to become a championship group of players at some point, because every time they've had like a top draft pick and been really, really bad, they've gotten really, really good, and we're not really, really good, but they've gotten to the finals. They've been contenders at some point, and I'm just not seeing it from Jacque Vaughn. And Magic fans annoy me. I'm sorry, this is not an Orlando Magic podcast, so I can say this: they're annoying.
And what would be the name of a Magic related podcast? Would that be like the top hat or the hat or
the Magic Word?
The Magic Word is they suck. That's the Magic Word.
Vucevic is the Magic Word.
Vooch. Vooch podcast. All right, we've really gone off the rails here, and I feel like that's me to blame, so I apologize to all the people listening to this. All two of you, whoever you might be.
It's the Heat Check podcast, so people are going to listen now because it's got an awesome name. I appreciate everybody coming out and helping us finding a name for this thing.
That was huge. I mean, I'm a little surprised at how many people actually provided suggestions, and I'm sorry that we couldn't take all of theirs. Maybe we'll be on a rotation basis, but then we won't be able to consistently build our fan base that way.
We got a few different suggestions that were really good, and then somebody suggested, why don't you just name the thing Heat Check and then name segments off of some of the other names, like Heat of the Moment, I thought was a good one, or the Hot Seat, or the Hot Hand, and there's a lot of things that use heat and burn and hot and things like that. I don't know if we're necessarily a segment-based type show, because I don't think you and I can handle that kind of structure, quite clearly. I don't think we can't handle that type of structure, but I thought it was an interesting suggestion.
Yeah, here I was thinking that might be a great suggestion, and that would really keep us from derailing the way we just did, but no, you're probably right, we couldn't handle it. Damn it. Thanks a lot, Wes.
Damn, right again. All right, there's one other thing I want to talk about before we sign off here. What do you think Mario Chalmers' plan with his hair is? Because there's something going on, right? He didn't just decide to grow it out like halfway. It's just kind of like that phase in middle school where I and a lot of other guys went through in middle school, where you're trying to grow out your hair to be like that skater boy look, and you get to that awkward medium area where you look like a lesbian, like an Ella DeGeneres type cut, and that's where he's at now.
You just lost a whole other demographic. Way to go.
Damn it.
Having said that, no, we love lesbians, no worries. Having said that, I don't know if you've ever watched Seinfeld, have you?
Yes, yeah.
I don't know if you remember one particular episode with George Costanza where you know, he just realized that everything in his life was this constant, you know, tribute to futility. So he just decided, you know, maybe it's time for me to do the exact opposite of what my inclination would be. Yeah. And he winds up being wildly successful, at least for one episode. Why he dropped it, I have no idea. But, you know, he decides to get something completely different at a restaurant, and he winds up picking up the most beautiful girl, etc. That is the approach to Mario Chalmers. Whatever you think works, whatever you think a normal person would do, it's the anti, you know, Mario. So you have to think in terms of Chalmers being, you know, kind of like a mirror reflection of who you are as a human being. So if you think there's a plan involved, there's a very good chance there is no plan. It's just kind of just experimenting, because why not? I don't feel like cutting my hair today.
You might be right, but I just feel like we're seeing something and that kind of disappoints me, because I'm looking forward to watching his hair grow out. Like, is he trying to get a flat top like Norris Cole? Because that would be interesting. Is he trying to go cornrows? Is he trying to go dreadlocks?
It'll be glorious, right? Regardless, we know it'll be something glorious.
Or he might just shave his head one day and nothing will ever come of this. But it's all, I just feel like there's a plan there, right? I feel like there's got to be a plan there.
I don't know.
He's a man with a plan. He sold his condo. He got a new place. He grew out his hair.
Yeah, but how is that part of a plan? It's like, I'm going to sell a place and buy a place and stay in the same area? And did he sell it before he became a free agent, expecting to kind of cash in there this summer and not getting any kind of significant offer? And he's like, well, Miami re-signed me. I guess I'm going to have to buy a place again. And you could totally picture Mario kind of wandering around South Beach, kind of homeless for a few weeks until he finally...
That's probably why he grew out his hair.
I didn't have any pocket change, so I couldn't afford to get a haircut. Little did he know he was going to get this big cash payday in a few days. And then there he is, and I kind of likes it, because, you know, why not? It looks good.
I could see Chalmers going from couch to couch among guys in the Heat locker room, and after like a couple of days, them just yelling at him, telling him to get out of the house and find his own place.
And he's like, but you said it was cool for a week. He's like, damn, Mario. It's time for you to move on. So
you ate all the Fruit Loops, Mario. All of them.
Yes. Yeah, I see him being a big cereal guy. Like, he just eats boxes and boxes. Dry cereal, wet cereal, he'll eat it all.
I thought that was confirmed, that he was really into, like, Cracker Jacks.
Really?
Yeah, I'm making that up, but I'm pretty sure you're right. I could totally see him being a cereal guy. There's two people in this world, cereal people and not cereal people.
That's the name for the podcast, or at least should we have a segment,
yeah.
Cereal or not cereal. And I think we look at one opponent of an upcoming upcoming game and say cereal or not cereal.
So, Cleveland Cavaliers, cereal or not cereal?
Not cereal. I don't think any of them have a fun bone in their body. Kevin Love, no. Maybe Kevin Love. The other, LeBron, definitely not. I know you see him in that commercial that I despise watching now, but yeah, sitting with his kids playing, watching them eat cereal, I just don't see it, you know, happen. He, you know, especially since he cut out carbs or whatnot.
Yeah.
Kyrie Irving, no cereal for him.
No.
John Marion, maybe?
You know who doesn't eat cereal is Ray Allen. And if the Cavaliers are not a cereal team, then Ray Allen's signing there.
Well, let's, on the off chance that he's listening to this podcast, then I think we can clearly say that they love to eat cereal in Cleveland, and he should definitely re-sign with Miami.
Yeah, we hate cereal. It's the worst. All right, thanks, David.
You got it.
Thanks for listening to The Heat Check. You can check out mine and David's writing at allyoucanheat.com on the Fansided Network. Join us again next week.